The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 475 for November 17th, 2013.
And welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found. We answer your questions, we share your tips, we share tips of our own, and together we all try to learn a little something new about the Mac here in Durham, New Hampshire. I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fearful, Connecticut, this is John F. Braun. But it's gotten kind of crowded in here, Dave, because...
Well, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I also have...
Pilot Pete.
Welcome back, Pilot Pete.
Welcome back. Thanks for having me, gents.
It's great to have you. And all the way from on the Skype lines, we have somebody else. Say hi.
Hi, Michael Johnston in Rockford, Illinois.
The home of Cheap Trick and Michael Johnston.
Indeed.
Yeah. Hey, it's great to have you, Michael. Everybody that listens to the show knows who you are, because, of course, we thank you in every show for all the work that you do behind the scenes, converting Mac Geek Gab into AAC for our... chapterized pleasure. And but you're here today to talk about a couple other things too, and really just to join us for the show too. So that's good. You'll talk about your new Appler.com website. GetAppler.com, sorry.
Yeah.
I have it written wrong here. I know the URL. I say it every time. I stopped getting it wrong
for a long time.
What's that?
For a little while anyway, until today.
That's right.
Until just now.
That's right. Yep. 0 days without a workplace accident now. That's
exactly.
Right. All right. So it'll be crowded. It'll be crazy. It'll be fun. John, hey, how you doing over there?
Fantastic.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. All right. I'm going to get into this. I'm going to talk about our first sponsor. Our first sponsor is Barebones Software at barebones.com. Barebones are the folks that make both BB Edit and Yojimbo, along with Text Wrangler and several other things. These guys... Really, what it comes down to is they've got a team of people that knows how to write software, and BB Edit is one of my favorite utilities. I leave that thing running all day long on my Mac in the office. There is never a time when BB Edit's not running, and it's not because I'm writing code all day long. I really don't write a lot of code anymore. But I'm constantly finding myself managing text files or just managing text. Certainly, I do use it when I'm going to need to write anything in HTML or PHP, or if I ever do any C stuff. Of course, it works fine for that. JavaScript. And the cool part about it is it senses what language you're writing in and formats the text visually on the screen. It doesn't change the text on the disk, but it formats it on the screen to highlight functions and parse things out. And you can actually fold up functions or expand functions. So it's great for that kind of stuff, but it's also great just for all those little things you need to do with text, like sorting something or converting from rich text to just regular text. That's actually done really easily with BB Edit, because BB Edit doesn't support rich text. You take rich text, you paste it in, you copy it, and bam, now you've converted that rich text into plain text, and you can paste it in. It doesn't come with any crazy formatting or anything. If you need to count characters and words and all of that, BB Edit does that automatically. It just shows up at the bottom of the window. If you need to sort things, it's really, really simple. You just paste it in, go to the menu and choose sort, and boom, you're done. Really, really easy to use. And it's just fantastic. And you can also invoke it from the command line. So if you're one of those terminal geeks and you don't like to necessarily edit text in, you know, the little terminal window, because VT100 or whatever they're emulating down there isn't as nice as being able to use your mouse, you type BB Edit and the name of the text file, and boom, up it comes in BB Edit. And then you can just edit. And when you save, it saves it back there. Really good stuff. Highly recommend you check it out. And you can download a trial copy from them at barebones.com. So go ahead and check them out. BB Edit from barebones.com. You know, John, last week we ran out of time. We did what may have been our longest show ever. And at 90 minutes, we had to cut ourselves off. So we missed a couple of geek challenges that I wanted to throw out there, that we wanted to throw out there. So I'm going to throw those out. Of course, if any of us here or any of the folks in the chat room, will say hi to everybody at MacGeekGab.com/stream listening in and chatting with us. If anybody knows the answer while we're going through these, great. But really, these are geek challenges. We kind of throw them out to you folks, and we're always curious. So with that, I think it's time to start with geek challenge number one. Geek challenge number one comes to us from David. He says, I'd love to become a tag person, but my nested folders are doing a great job of defining everything. What I'd really like is a way to have all of my files tagged with the names of their enclosing folder, and better yet, their entire path. So a file contained in Documents, Projects, Client A, Project 1 would be assigned 3 tags, and one in Documents, Archives, Client A, Project 0 would share 2 of those tags. It would also mean that in the future, instead of moving a file when I'm finished with it, I could just delete the project tag and replace it with the archive tag. The problem is I don't want to manually do all that work with my dozens of folders and hundreds of subfolders. I think a script should be able to do it, and I'm not talking about a folder action that I have to assign hundreds of times either. Mostly I want to avoid the needless typing of tags. To my chagrin, there doesn't seem to be an automator action for tags yet, and I don't know how to copy the name of the enclosing folder anyway. I think the script would be pretty short and simple for somebody who knew how to write it. It would essentially say tag each file that is not a folder with the name of the parent folder and its parent folder. You could iterate through it, run it once for your entire hard drive, and have tags based on your folder structure. Or perhaps there's another way. So, yeah, anybody that's automating tagging, and Pete, you're raising your hand. So
I actually have a question, but it may be the solution.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't tried it, but does Hazel do tags?
Hazel might be the answer here.
Yeah. I love Hazel, man. That moves files all over my computer for me.
Yeah. And if Hazel's not currently the answer, it might be with a Maverick savvy update.
Sure.
I mean, I know it's compatible with Mavericks, but that doesn't mean it's embraced Mavericks yet. So, yeah, that's a good idea. I love Hazel. That's good stuff.
I have an idea.
Go, John.
So I think I may have found something, and I will paste that into our chat room.
Okay.
And, if you don't know, we have a chat room, MacGeekGab.com/stream, where you can join us for listening to the audio and participating in our IRC chat room here. But I did a quick search here, and my Google Foo, I think, appears to be strong. But one place that I go for programming tips of all sorts, Dave, so there's this awesome site, StackOverflow.com.
Okay.
And I actually found an article titled Modifying File Tags with AppleScript.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it shows a code snippet. It doesn't do exactly what we want here, but like with many things, I mean, I always go to this site to get code to start with, because writing things from scratch to me is usually, well, to be honest, just a waste of time, because somebody else has probably wanted to do what you do. So as long as your Google Foo is strong, it looks like they have added this feature to AppleScript in Mavericks. So.
Cool. That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Anything else on that? Michael, any thoughts on that? Are you a tags guy?
I haven't gotten into tags yet. I haven't really explored how they work, if they're much different from the labels.
Right.
And actually, as you guys were talking, I was curious to know, because I have a couple Macs, if and how tags work across multiple machines, because it seems that when you add a tag to something, the finder automatically brings that in as a list of the potential tags on your machine, as opposed to something that you search for and you may or may not have.
Yep.
So
that's it. That's an interesting question. Yeah. How are the syncing? Very interesting. Fun. That's what we do. All right. Yet another one here from a different Dave. I promise it's a different Dave. He has a question too. That's the right likely story.
Guys, thank you for keeping my brain thinking around so many enjoyable Mac and geeky topics as I ride to and from work. You mentioned in 473 about the concept of pages being stripped down. I read soon after 473 came out that Apple indeed has confirmed they'll add back features. They didn't mention mail merge, though, so I tried my previous version of pages, and for some reason mail merge wasn't working. Oh boy. Is there a mail merge program out there for printing out paper as the result that would work without spending $180 on FileMaker Pro? I'd love your advice on that. Last, I recently received my first Synology distation, and I can't say enough about it. The amount of cool, geeky things you can do with it, such as easy file sharing without storing those files on your own computer, taking up room, is just amazing. So thank you for pointing us that way. I'd imagine you could do a whole show on distation alone, even though that might be crazy. But talk about multiple cool stuff found. So cheers, and keep getting caught doing the amazing work. And this is where you can cut me off. Take care.
Thanks, Dave. That's you're too kind, my friend. So yeah, mail mirrored software, it is a shame. Of course, you can still use the old pages, right? But that's not gonna fly for very long. There is something I know of called TapForms. It is essentially a FileMaker killer or FileMaker replacement. It's made by a third party. It's not, you know, affiliated with FileMaker, obviously, at tapforms.com. The Mac version is $25. I think the iPad version is about that, maybe 20, and then the iPhone version is a little bit less. But it's it does not yet do exactly what you want. But I talked to the author, and they say that it's definitely something that's planned for probably, you know, next 3 to 6 months. Down the road. So that's something to watch, but it's not going to answer your call right now. Any mail merge stuff any of you guys know about?
Well, Microsoft Word, that probably costs as much, if not more, as what he was mentioning. But that led me to think, Dave,
you'd have to merge from an Excel file, right, at that point?
I haven't used the feature in a while. I just looked, and the version that I have installed, I mean, there is a under the tools menu, mail merge module,
yeah,
or feature, yeah. But I haven't used it in detail. But that leads me to suggest that you may want to look at one of the, I haven't looked at these in a while either, Dave, like OpenOffice or some of these open source Office compatible things to see if maybe they have some rudimentary mail merge features in there. OpenOffice is one. I'm trying to think of some others here. That's the first one that comes to mind.
That's a good idea. Huh.
Under pressure, yeah, that seems to happen.
Oh, yeah.
But I haven't looked in a while. I know there's another one. OpenOffice, again, is just the one that pops into my head here.
Yeah.
As a somewhat Office-compatible suite.
Very interesting. Huh. I never would have thought it. I like that. OpenOffice. All right.
Yeah,
cool.
It's now Apache. OpenOffice.org.
Right.
And there may be a few others, but we'll have to dig for that. But hey, Price is Right.
Right. Yeah. Huh. Ah, you surprised me, Mr. Braun. I like that. That's good. All right. Anybody else? Or is it time to move on to our third and final?
Well, we had some in the room here. Well, we had a couple others.
Catch.
Let's see. LibreOffice. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have not heard of that one. And then here, you may know about this, Dave. Someone else suggested Google Docs for mail merge.
Really?
Google Docs do that?
Google Docs do a printed mail? I know they'll do like email mail merge. But I mean, it's possible. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just didn't know. Huh. Google Docs mail merge. And they will. Yeah. Huh.
Wow, we just got almost all the answers here today.
I know, it's great. Tonight. Well, that's the point of the Geek Challenge is, you know, sometimes most of the questions that we bring to the show, we come in with what we at least believe to be a correct answer. But sometimes the stuff shows up and it's like, you know, At the time that we're answering the question, scratching our head just isn't enough. But they seem like good enough questions that should have solutions. So that's why we bring them in. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. Like, you know, the what I would consider the Holy Grail Geek Challenge that we've been asking for basically since we started this show is how to get iTunes to sync a library amongst multiple machines.
Oh, well, that's easy. Here's the answer. Oh, sorry.
Like reliably and keeping all your playlists in sync and all of your, you know, everything. But I want one library for my house. But that doesn't, you know, I mean, we all know that that's just not there yet. So
Synology is I've actually been dabbling, Dave. I actually did the video one. We may address that in a later where I actually did some video streaming to my Apple TV with the Synology, which is pretty darn cool.
It's very cool. Yeah.
But they have an iTunes server, I thought. But yeah, but that's not quite what we're looking for.
That's not quite what we're looking. Apple, in order for this to work, Apple would need to fully embrace and implement this. It's not just something that could happen kind of around the seams, so, which is unfortunate. But it is what it is. All right. Third and final one. You want to rant about iTunes, Michael, or should we just move on?
Not enough time.
Not. All right. Paul asks, I wonder if you guys can help with a question I can't seem to find the answer to about Mavericks and Mountain Lion and prior operating systems. I relied heavily on being able to make my folders different colors, either to make one of my many folders stand out in Dropbox or as a way of color coding the status of a file or folder. Blue files were those things that had been sent to clients, green signed off, orange needed action, that kind of thing. With Mavericks, I knew that tags were a new feature, but I didn't realize that tags would mean the functionality of being able to color folders would be lost to us. I don't really have much use for tags, but really would like to be able to color code my folders again. The ability to tag a file and have a small colored dot appear associated with the file in the Finder window is, I'm afraid, not cutting the mustard. And mustard is an interesting tag color. Any ideas how I can get my colored files and folders back? Anybody? Don't all speak at once.
I think they might need to use something besides Finder to get that back. I was actually looking it up in Apple discussion forums, and it looks like someone said that Pathfinder might be the solution for that.
Yeah.
But it's just a dot now. So.
Or forklift.
Maybe.
I don't know if forklift will do that or not.
Just make sure you're close to the mic, Pete.
Oh, sir. That's okay. I don't know if forklift will do that or not.
I think they heard you. Yeah. I've got enough compression on you that we probably can get away with you being lazy, but, you know, it's not how we roll.
He's my yub.
It's just, Pathfinder. I mean, yeah. Yeah, that's probably the best option. All right. Hey, you know, it hit me that I didn't put something on the agenda that I probably should have. John, but my agenda is on something that I should have put on the agenda. And that is, I replaced my iPad this week. I placed an order for an iPad mini, T-Mobile iPad mini. And I thought I was going to have to wait 5 to 10 days because that's how that went. And then my local Apple store had one. So I ran down and got it on Wednesday night. And we talked about this last year when I had that iPad mini, the non-Retina iPad mini from Apple to test for whatever that month was. And I loved it. And it didn't take me but about 3 hours to remember how much I loved it and be totally. It's interesting. I do not miss the size of the other. I went from an iPad 3, which had a Retina screen, to this iPad mini. And I don't even notice that the screen is smaller, if that makes any sense. I suppose I'm keeping it closer to my face when I'm using it just in a natural way. But there's nothing that I've done yet, including doing the show where I actually use a stylus to mark things off on the agenda. It's just flowing as smoothly as it ever has. But of course, the nice part is it's tiny and I can bring it around and I can hold it in one hand to read and all of that great stuff. The Retina iPad mini is the iPad I've always wanted.
You know, as bizarre as some people may think that sounds, I'm going to back you up in the sense that I just went from the 11 or the 13 inch to the 11 inch Air.
Yes.
And within a day or so.
The MacBook Air.
The MacBook Air.
Yep.
And I'm looking at it going, this doesn't seem any smaller than the 13 inch one.
Yep.
It just, you naturally adapt to the size and it's so much nicer for hauling around.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. So I'm eager to try that. That looks cool.
It's great. And I got the T-Mobile one because T-Mobile will offer me, and I know this is going to grind your gears, John, but on the iPad it works. T-Mobile offers me 200 megs a month of free data. And then of course I can buy more, or I could get an AT&T SIM and add it to my AT&T account with my iPhones and all of that stuff. But you know, even in a case, it's nothing. It's Pete's holding it in his hand. I bought a cheap case too. I just went on Amazon because I wanted a folio case and I didn't have one in the pile of cases that I had. I had a lot of cases and all the iPad mini cases for the non-Retina work on the Retina iPad mini. The Retina iPad mini is 0.3 millimeters thicker, I think. But but it or I don't know, it's a little bit thicker.
Just beautiful though. Yeah. The reading, it's so easy on the eyes. He's got he's got Goodreader up, and he's annotating the PDF from the show agenda.
Note Taker HD.
Note Taker. That's sorry. Yep. Which is one I use for notes when I'm doing meetings at work.
Yeah.
And boy, that's just easy on the eyes. There's nothing to it.
There's nothing to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
I'm not happy with T-Mobile, Dave. They misled me.
I know you're not. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they claimed that I could do a data plan and hotspot on my iPhone 5S, and I talked to one of their reps on the phone, and he sent me the nano SIM, and I put it in there, put some money in my account, and then I called back, and they're like, oh, no, you can't do that. I'm like, but I could do it with the iPad, right? And they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what's the difference? To me, it's a not a technical limitation, but they just choose not to allow the, as far as I know, they just don't choose to allow the iPhone to do this.
Got to jailbreak that thing.
That's true.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I wonder if that's part of Apple's deal where they don't allow that unless you have a truly unlocked iPhone. But if your iPhone was truly unlocked, would they allow you to do it?
Well, it is unlocked.
I know, but...
I put a T-Mobile SIM in there. I got a phone number. No, I'm allowed. The Verizon iPhone 5S is unlocked, if I understand the term correctly.
Right, but you don't have a T-Mobile voice plan on that phone.
Well, that's what eventually happened once I got the SIM from them.
Right.
You know, it said on it, you know, it said, you know, no contract nano SIM. And I'm like, great, put it in there. It, you know, says my carrier is T-Mobile. I get a signal. And when I tried to either access data or activate the hotspot, said, well, you don't have this feature with your plan. And I'm like, okay, well, let me call back and activate that. And they said, no, we can't do that. I think they won't. It's not that they can't, but they won't. And I don't know if it's contractual or what.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard about this.
The radio.
From,
I mean, it works. Sure. It works.
Yeah. You just can't do tethering, right? That's what's
correct.
Limited. Yeah.
And unfortunately, when I, you know, talked to their salesperson and said, this is all I want to do. I want to do data through the phone. I don't want to do it through. On the bright side, though, Verizon did tell me. So I called them back, and apparently I can enable and disable hotspot, and they will prorate the charges for that. So it's not as bad as I thought. I thought if I enable that feature, it would be permanent, but they claim that I can enable and disable it at will and only pay for what I use. So,
oh, that's good. Oh, so maybe that's easier for you anyway.
It is, yeah, because I don't need hotspot. I don't need to pay the extra $20 a month, but
right.
When I like it, like when I'm traveling, I'd like to turn it on and be able to access it. So
sure, yeah, no, of course. Yeah. Yeah,
so that's unfortunate.
Yeah. I've heard about that, though. You can't buy just a data SIM for the iPhone, but you know, you can buy one for a MiFi, right? Or the iPad.
Well, that's what they said. You could either buy a hotspot device from us or an iPad, and then we'll let you do it. And it's like, well, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think from the carriers, from the people that I've talked to kind of deeper in with the carriers, I believe that's a limitation that Apple has put on the device.
No. Okay.
Yeah. Because they all are like stuck that way. It's not just T-Mobile, from what I understand. So it's good stuff. Uh-huh. But I do love this Mini. So back to the cases. You know, as we've talked about, John and I tend to wind up getting gifts from the FedEx guy. It's not from FedEx, but the FedEx guy delivers gifts all the time, and often these are filled with cases. But I didn't have exactly the case that I wanted, so I went onto Amazon, and my kids have taught me, because my kids like to have like different cases. They like them with stupid designs on them or whatever. So they go online and they buy cases, and they buy these like cheap iPhone cases. They're like $2 or something on Amazon. And so I went on and I found this case that it's a really like slim folio case, but it doesn't come over the top of the iPad. It just kind of grips it on the sides, and it's exactly what I wanted. And I actually found one for $3 on Amazon, but I think this one cost me $10. Okay. And it's cheap. I mean, it's, you know, it's from a company called Fotiv that I'd never heard of before. But I reasoned that A, it's a $10 experiment and I really wanted to know. And B, I also reasoned that I think the same Malaysian family that makes all of the cases for, like, you know, Spec and Incase and all those guys probably makes this too. And it's just, you know, marketed in a different way or not marketed at all. And sure enough, I mean, this case is it's got some quirky things to it, but I trust my iPad in it. It works fine. They obviously don't do all the great marketing, but you know, if you're just looking for a simple case, It's not so bad. So, so there you go.
I got one too. I should send out the link to it. I think it's a, it's made by inexpensive labor here, but it was through a Living Social. I don't know if you ever did deals for them, but they have a, but they had a battery case for the iPhone 4, $11 for the iPhone 5, $16. And it's a 2200 milliamp hour. And, you know, I powered it up, you know, put my phone in there. Nothing burst into flames. And it even has the one for the 5 actually has a little stand, which is a feature I do like. So
that's good.
Seems to work. Actually, I'll send out my link to it.
Yeah. Put the link in the show notes. That'd be great. Yeah. It's just interesting. Now, with the I will say with the iPad 5. With the iPhone 5 or with anything with a lightning connector, so your battery case would fall into this, you've got to make sure that it's certified to work with iOS 7 because most things are not, and that's not good. So so iOS 7.
Oh yeah, the people that I ordered the you know, where I told you one out of the four cables didn't work, and I sent a support request. I think they're in Hong Kong or something like that. They're like, oh, okay, we'll send you four more. Based on the email I got from their support, they're like, oh, okay, we'll send you more.
Right, right.
So as long as one of the four works, that's cool.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Now, Dave, do you watch a lot of video on your iPad?
I do, on airplanes, typically. That's okay. About the airplanes and hotel rooms, but yes, yeah.
So, because what I usually do, and I went without an iPad for a while and only used my girlfriend's Mini for a little bit when I didn't have my iPad, waiting for the Air. And I like to put my iPad down in the kitchen somewhere while I'm cooking or something like that and watch something. So I always thought that a Mini just wouldn't be big enough. And so that's why I went back with the Air. Although I will say, after looking at hers for a while, looking at the iPad Air, I was like, wow, this thing is so big.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's, I remember when I tested it last year, I haven't taken this Mini obviously on an airplane yet. I only got it on Wednesday, but I did take the non-Retina Mini on a cruise vacation that we took right about this time last year. And it was fine on the airplane. It was great because it's small, you know, and when you're in like coach class cattle seats, you know, it's nice to have something a little smaller. And I really like reading on this. I just could never get comfortable holding the full size, you know, the iPad 3 to read for any extended period of time. It just I just never could do it. But with the Mini, it's no problem at all. So.
Yeah, I still kind of feel that way about the Air, even though it is lighter.
Really?
But it's more comfortable to read with two hands on that thing for sure.
Yeah.
But this discussion has made me feel better about the fact that I have a 17-inch MacBook Pro that I've had for a while.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't have them anymore when I go to upgrade eventually, that's been kind of upsetting, but the fact that you guys have moved to smaller sized devices kind of makes me feel better about the whole thing when I eventually have to switch.
I can't tell you how hesitant I was to even go down to the 11. I really was. I saw Dave working with the 11.
I had the 11.
It looks
good.
You know, I really want one, but you know, can I get away with it? I thought, well, you know, I'll give it a try. I've got the 30 days to send it back.
Yeah. And I've had my 11 for 2 years and there's no way I would even get a 13 going forward.
With the power of the processors and the SSDs and everything like that. I mean, what we have today wasn't even dreamt of 4 or 5 years ago.
That's right.
And now with the power, it's easy to do.
Yeah. I'm still with you, Michael. I got the 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Well, I still
like the 15-inch form factor.
Yeah, it is nice. And I also work with a second display always, so that'll mitigate it for sure.
Mm-hmm. The biggest part about the thing that makes the 13-inch Air totally usable is that it's got a full-size keyboard.
Yes.
Did I say the 13-inch Air?
I meant the
11-inch Air. But the 13-inch has one, too. But you're not sacrificing that keyboard for any other size that you're...
It's not a netbook-type keyboard.
Correct.
You know, that used to drive you nuts.
Correct. And the screen, you know, the pixel depth is fine. Yeah, I love it. It's the first laptop I've had where I actually use it on the couch. My 15-inch was just too heavy, and you know, I just blech. That's terrible. But the 11 is awesome. Yeah, smaller is better. It's good. Blech, I say.
What do you mean?
Yeah, blech.
I say blech to you.
You should get try the
no.
Maybe even the 13-inch air for you, John. If you feel like you need some middle ground to be comfortable with, you might. I really highly recommend it.
No, I got something here that you know with a really small screen, and I couldn't imagine doing real work with it. So,
what's your really small screen?
Oh, the iPhone.
Well, yeah, right. That's why there's devices that are large. I'm not talking about a 4-inch screen. I'm talking about an 11.
Yeah, I'm talking 15. They still make them.
They do. Yeah, they do. Are you going to get fully Retina?
I think that's the only choice now, isn't it?
I think you're right. Yeah. All right.
All right.
This is good.
Thanks for keeping us on.
No, I meant to put this on the agenda because it's, I knew people were going to, you know, it was people that asked about it. So, all right. I want to talk about our second sponsor, and that is Connected Data. Connected Data are the people that make the Transporter. The Transporter's been out for a little while, and they've actually been through quite a few iterations of stuff over there, and they just released a new model. So for those of you that don't know, the Transporter, the concept behind Transporter is private cloud. We all know what Dropbox is. We all either use it or we've heard from people that use it, a place to store your files that are synced amongst all your computers. Dropbox syncs with the cloud. And the cloud is this nebulous place, so much so that you don't know where your data is or who has access to it. And yes, it's encrypted on Dropbox's end, but it's encrypted with their key. So not only are they holding your data, but they also hold the key to decrypt your data. This is handy if you need your data, but it's also handy if someone else does. And maybe you don't like, maybe you don't need to have this, or maybe you do. Maybe, you know, you work somewhere where you just can't store your data anywhere that you don't have full control over it. Well, the Transporter solves that problem by putting a device in your house or in your office that stores all your data. You now become the cloud. The Transporter is the cloud. You can access it as long as you have internet access, both at home and wherever you are. You can access it from anywhere, locally or remote. And it syncs up. It syncs a folder, especially with version 2 of their software. They finally started to get to the right place with the way the syncing works. And it keeps getting better. But that's the concept, is you just sync with this thing. Multiple people can sync with it. You can have one Transporter for multiple people, or like John and I have, we each have Transporters, and we can have our Transporters stay in sync with each other on a folder by folder basis, so that we can have, say, a Mac Geekab folder that we have, but our Transporters sync it, and then we sync locally to our own Transporter, which gets really interesting. It's pretty cool. They've got a couple new things. So the first new thing is, actually, they've got a few new things, not just a couple. The first new thing is the Transporter sync. Originally, and they still exist, the Transporters have a drive inside them. Well, the Transporter sync is just the magic hardware that plugs into your network, and it's got a USB port on it. And you can plug a USB drive in. The Transporter sync is $99, and you've got it. We've got a code that we'll tell you about that gets you 10% off of that. So it's $99, and that's, and you bring your own drive, plug it in via USB, and you're good to go. Then they've got the original Transporters, I'll call it, but the prices on those have come down by $50. So a 1 terabyte Transporter is now $249. A 2 terabyte Transporter is now $349, and they have a new Transporter with just a 500 gig drive for $199. So you can, you know, there's a lot of options starting at $99 and then going up from there. All of those are available to get the 10% discount which is the coupon code MGG. And lastly, I promised there were three new things. Version 2.4. of Transporter desktop is coming out, and they're doing a couple of interesting things. They're starting to focus on the stuff that people want to actually sync. One of the things is all of OS X special folders. And by that, they mean desktop, documents, downloads, movies, music, and pictures. And if you syncing these with version 2.4, which we've seen, it's not out yet. It's in beta. You just check a box and say, I want to sync this with my Transporter, and boom, now it's synced with it. and you can have your other Macs sync with it. So you can have your desktop folder in sync amongst all your Macs just with the click of a button, and Transporter manages that for you. And the same with documents, the same with pictures, et cetera, et cetera. So while this isn't going to give us the Holy Grail Geek Challenge answer with iTunes that we talked about, it will get you closer. It'll at least have your music in all your places. So, you know, it steps in the right direction.
So let me get that right. It's going to be able to put, like you said, desktop folder.
Yes.
But so the desktop folder won't necessarily be stored. It's not stored on the transporter, but it's keeping it synced.
No. It's stored on the transporter.
Oh, on the transporter.
And on your Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's in sync. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And they have iOS. They've got iOS apps for iPad and iPhone. I've got a question from the Mac mommy. And yeah, I've used it to go get files and pull things, and they just goes and gets them. Works, which is how it's supposed to be.
Essentially, you have a 2 terabyte storage iPhone.
Yeah, well, you've got access to 2 terabytes of storage. Exactly. I mean, let's be realistic. Yeah, you know, sure. If you're across a network, or especially across a, you know, if you're a remote,
sure,
it takes some time to transfer. But it's good stuff. So check it out. Let's see. It's at filetransporter.com/MGG. Of course, you can get the 10% off with the MGG coupon code. All right. Now, Michael.
Yes.
Yes. So Michael Johnston is here with us. Michael Johnston has done many things. He created iPhone Alley before he sold it. And then those people took it and ran it straight into the ground. which sucks. Whoops. Which really sucks for a lot of reasons. It sucks. You did a great job with that site. I still wish you were running it.
Me too.
Do you? Yeah. They should give it back to you.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
Yeah. They won't. I don't know. Maybe they will. I don't know. Maybe they will.
Maybe they will.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But moving on. Right. And you're also the host and creator of the We Have Communicators podcast, which is, again, an excellent podcast about all things iOS that you usually do with Jeff Gamet and Adam Christensen and occasionally other folks.
Yep.
But for the last year, maybe year plus, you've been working on a website at getappler.com, GETAPPLR.com, which is about solves the problem of finding out what apps you might like. Because let's face it, Apple's recommendation system, well, they don't actually have a recommendation system, do they? I mean, they do. Yeah. They think they say that they do, but I think it's a perfunctory thing, right? It's like, oh, here we have it. Stop asking for it. So,
they kind of run it like it's the music store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they just kind of decide what, I mean, they do look at charts of what people think is popular, but at the same time, it's as general as possible.
Right. Right. So there's no way to tell what your friends like or what people that like apps like you like. I mean, Apple has the Genius thing, but it's, it's not so great. So I've used Appler. I have an account there. I've had an account for a long time, but I don't use it on a regular basis. And I want to understand, I want you to convince me to use it on a regular basis. And I don't say that I'm quite open to it. I just never think to go there. So tell us more about it and remind me why I need to be there every day.
Okay. Well, you kind of went over the general purpose of it, but it's, I always thought that even in the early days that about 95 to 98% of the apps in the store are pretty bad or not relevant to me at all. And then at some point, all my friends every once in a while would say, hey, have you seen this app? Have you seen this app? It's what I'm having fun with right now. It's really cool. And that's still how I find awesome apps is when people tell me about them. Very rarely do I go to Apple's homepage or the App Store homepage or scroll around in various subdirectories there. Because like I said, it's very generalized and it's not focused on the sort of stuff that you like and your friends kind of, filter that down for you because you hang out with people who have similar tastes and like similar things. And so Appler works on a follow model where you have all this giant database of the apps that people like or they don't like or that they don't really care for either way. But when you start following people, it filters it down into something that is meaningful to you. So not only do you get to, so when you go to Appler, GETAPPLR.com, you have the activity page, which just shows you what's been going on recently. And it's based on either the people you follow, or you can toggle it to see everybody if you want. And you can see what's going on there. It also gives you a popular view. So it pulls apps that are popular within the scope that you're looking. And it also, it's discover popular apps. So it's not just popular apps. It actually looks at the fact that you own certain apps. And so it just subtracts those apps from that equation because you've already seen some of the apps that are popular. Maybe you already have Tweetbot, but it is trending, but you don't need to see it because you already have it. So it, one of the cool features of Appler is that it knows the apps that you have. And so that provides a lot of really interesting benefits like that one that I said, but also the fact that when you are on there, either looking at the activity page or the popular page, or just like checking out what apps Dave Hamilton likes or the apps that I like or whoever your friends are, when there's an app that appears that you already have, because it knows what you have, it provides you with the controls right there to rate those right away. And it's one click rating. And if you want to add a review, you can, but certain apps just don't need a review. And the big thing, the reason I'm here talking about it now, the Appler has been out for over a year now. But what I really wanted to do was make something that is perfectly created for an iPhone. I sort of did it around the idea of an iPad screen, but now there is a fully optimized mobile version. So it's perfect whenever you whenever you're thinking, hey, I want to check out what's cool in the App Store now. So you just pull it up. Instead of going to the App Store, you can pull this up, scroll around, see what apps your friends have. You can look at their specific profiles and see all of the apps that they've recently rated. Or you can even look at someone's entire app library and search around and do all that fun stuff. Now, one of the best things that I wanted to add in here was Apple, the App Store has reviews, but it's a one-way street. Someone writes a review. You don't know who they are, first of all, which is, you know, you get the benefit of knowing who these people are if they're your friends.
Right.
But you can also interact with them. You say, hey, you like this app. Does it do this one thing that I'm curious about it doing? And then they get a notification and they respond to you. And you can figure out if it's the right app for you before you spend whatever amount of money on it. And you can also bookmark things on here, which allows you to not only just keep a list of those apps that you say, hey, that's pretty cool, I might use that sometime in the future, but not right now. But it also gives you the ability to get notifications if you want when an app has been updated. So maybe it's something that the app hasn't gotten to the point where you want it, but it looks promising. You can check that box and it'll let you know when an app has been updated.
Oh, see, okay. This is what I was looking for.
Okay, there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, that's the reason. Yeah. Because there are apps where it's like, ooh, that one's close. But yeah.
Huh. Even if it's an app that you've downloaded. Like some apps I've already downloaded, but I'm like, I don't need this on my phone. It doesn't do what I want, but maybe it will one day.
There are apps I keep on my phone only because I'm waiting to see when they get updated.
Yep.
Now, one thing I want to point out is, like, and you've said this many times, that Appler knows what apps you have.
Yes.
But you didn't explain how it knows. And I think this is one of the coolest things. You don't have to go in and tell it every app that you have if you don't want to. If you like, you can link it with your iTunes store account and it will download a list of every app that you've downloaded and automatically populate your apps on Appler with that list and keep it up to date, which I think is awesome.
It actually, if you want, it'll automatically give you a little reminder a couple days after you've downloaded a new app. It'll say, hey, you've gotten this new app. What do you think about it? And then obviously you're probably, you know, in your bed, you just woke up checking your emails or what have you in the morning. And okay, you know, you click on that and you do your couple ratings and then you're done, kind of thing. And that's an optional deal. But that's, at the same time, in the name of security, that's not required at all. You don't have to link your Apple ID. Because I know that some people just don't want to do that. And it's just about as easy as possible to ID so that you just kind of go in and say, this is an app I own, instead of saying, yes, I own it. Now let me rate it. It's just, here are all of the apps, and then press the rating button. Now the benefits aren't as great because when you see an app that someone else rated, you don't get the option to rate it right there because it doesn't know that you have it.
Right.
And you don't get a couple other things like the little reminders and whatnot. So, I mean, it is a lot more useful when you do that, but if you don't feel comfortable doing that, you don't have to.
Right. Yeah. No, it's good stuff. And John, you were going to say something. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a few questions. So I did recently sign up for it, and yeah, that was my one question. I thought that was a cool part. Now, is that's an API, I guess, that Apple offers that gives your site access to the,
they offer it to themselves.
Okay, I guess I was curious from a programming standpoint how you're able to. I mean, they know.
So yeah, okay. I think this might classify as secret sauce.
It is secret sauce.
Yeah, all right, but that's fine.
I'll say the way it's done is the same exact way that your iPhone does it. And this is something that I kind of, when I was working on this, Adam Christensen has kind of been advising me from time to time on this. And we were trying to put our heads together on this last year. And I realized at some point, wait a minute, whenever I go into my iPhone to look at my purchased apps, I don't have to type in my password. So because I didn't want to store somebody's password, because I could do it storing a password, but
sure.
That would put everybody at risk if someone got into my database.
All right. So, I think I get how you're doing it. So yeah, the other observation I made here, which I think I answered my own question, but so I was going through the site here. So it lists all my apps. And my question was, like, for example, I was able to, you know, easily look up all the apps that you have. Mm-hmm. Now, my question was, like, say I don't want everybody to know that I have the My Pretty Pony app.
Yeah.
Right? Could I delete that from my list of apps? And it appears that you offer that level of control where if I don't want to list an app, and actually I noticed it lists some apps here that I have since deleted and stuff and are not current, mm-hmm. but I have downloaded them at one point. So, yeah, I may want to tune my list here of things for whatever reason, if it's something I either don't have anymore, or I just got to do some housekeeping or, okay.
Yeah, that's up to you. You can hide individual apps, from your library and, or you can even go entirely private mode in the style of Twitter so that only people who you've approved to follow you can see any of your stuff.
Okay. Right now, I don't think I have anything to hide, but
that's what you think, John.
Okay. Go ahead, John.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. And then the other part of the bookmarking feature is, in addition to the update notifications, of course, it will also update you if you want when an app goes on sale, or I should say if the price drops on it. So if you want, you can set that up as well. And so the other cool thing that I've done on the activity page, so when you're looking at everybody's stuff or on a particular person's activity or within their app library, you can filter down using various filters, such as I only want to see positive opinions, so you don't see the bad stuff. You can see only paid or only free. You can see iPad, iPhone, or universal apps, and you can filter it down by category or a combination of all of those things. So you can really figure out what you're looking for pretty fast.
It's pretty cool. I started digging back into it recently, and now now that you've told me about these notifications and stuff, especially with it where it syncs up with what I'm doing, I'm hooked now. And the UI that you got on the iPhone is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes me want to go back and tweak the desktop site too.
Yeah, yeah. I do have one question. Is there a way to mark an app as a favorite on the iPhone UI? Because that I could not find when I was going through it last night.
Yeah. So the way it is on both the desktop and the iPhone is to add or to manipulate the favorites in any way. So you have your list of the, these are my absolute favorite apps.
Yep.
They're on your profile. You edit that from your actual profile. So on your profile on the iPhone, there's a little gear next to my favorite apps and you press that and it goes into a big editing mode and you can add your apps.
So, but I can't do it when I'm going through and rating apps. There's no like
that's something that I want to add in there soon.
Cool.
That's been a very popular request.
Okay. All right. So I'm not alone.
I've got a question and or a feature request.
Sure.
Is there a way to link for people like me who aren't smart enough to get everything into one iTunes account? Is there a way to link multiple iTunes accounts? So all the apps that are on my phone, not just the apps that are under one account on my phone.
Yeah. Right now there's only one account that you can link to it.
Okay.
In the future, I may expand it to multiple. But what you can do is whenever you link your account to it, it will pull in all of those apps.
Okay.
And then, so if there's one primary and one secondary, so you would log in with the secondary first and it would suck in all those apps. And then you log in with the primary and then it'll pull in all the primaries. And so whichever one you want to keep regularly updated, you would keep logged in with, but it maintains those apps.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So then I would have the My Pretty Pony account if I did that. And I linked the one. Well, if I linked the one that the kids use, because they use, they like all the stupid games that like the Peppy games. Have you ever seen that Peppy bath game? I do this to my kids. I loaded the Peppy bath game onto my iPad before our last vacation. And I always sit in between the kids. I can't believe I'm telling this story. I sit between the kids on the airplane. It started when the kids were really young and Lisa was with them all day long, every day, every week. And we went on vacation. We'd get three seats on the plane on one side of the aisle and then the aisle seat on the other. And I would always give that aisle seat to Lisa and I would sit between the two kids and manage them for the flight. Right. Because this is something different. It's not what I do every day. And, you know, she gets to do something that she doesn't do every day, which is not manage the kids. So we still do this. I still sit between the kids, even though they could sit alone on the plane and be totally fine. Actually, my daughter has like flown alone, but it's become tradition. And so I knew that this was going to happen. And so the last trip that we did, I loaded Peppy Bath onto my iPad and I started playing it and the kids they just went nuts. I just started playing it and both of them, it took them like, 10 seconds to realize what was going on. But if anybody else on the plane had seen me like playing this game where you're like helping this 4-year-old child, it's not a real child, but it's, a cartoon child in the bathroom, they'd think I was some sort of pedophile. I mean, there's no question that that's what would happen and that would be bad. So I had to turn it off quickly, but the kids got a kick out of it. So that's
cool. If this is the second time you've said your kids did something stupid, I think you better smarten them up.
Mm. Oh boy.
They liked it.
Said they have stupid designs on their cases and now they run stupid apps. I mean, come on. Well, that's right. Kids are stupid.
No, they like to play. It's good. They loved it. They got a kick out of it. And they play it for the same. My kids are 13 and 11. They don't need Peppy Bath, right? I mean, they need it as much as I do. They just can get away with playing it and not have DCF come and ask them questions. Whereas if I play it too much, I'm pretty sure DCF's already here because we've got the NSA listening because we're doing this over Skype. So we'll say hello. That's good. We got to start saying hello to the NSA in every show.
Yeah.
Why not? Michael, I have a question here. I ask this question pretty much of anybody who's offering a product or service. As I try to do the journalist thing, in my travels here. But how you... Are you doing this for reasons other than the kindness of your out of the kindness of your heart and what I guess I'm suggesting, and if you don't want to answer you don't have to, but how are you making money off of this? I see ads on the site. Is that do you have any future plans or something you don't want to talk, you don't have to?
Well, no, I'll answer that for sure. Obviously it came out of a need in my life and in many other people's lives. So that's the primary reason I did it. But also, I totally want to make money on this because I think it's a useful thing for people. And, I right now I have Google Ads, and I make money off of any apps. I have the, Apple affiliate program. So if you buy an app through Appler, so if you click the link and go to the store, then I get I think 5% or something like that. But that actually reminds me, there's another really neat feature. If you're looking at apps on your desktop or on your desktop primarily, and it's something, hey, I want to get this app, then there's, instead of just going to it in the app store on your desktop, there's another option that says, send me a link if you're signed in. So what that does is just sends you an email to that app in the app store. So you can jump to it very quickly on your iPhone.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool. Well, thanks, Michael. And, keep us posted. I know you will, but, keep us posted on any new developments. Cause I you know, this is good stuff. And,
definitely.
And you're part of the Mac Geek Gab family. So it's, you know, it's even better stuff.
Yeah, and I appreciate having me on the show.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's good. It's excellent. I'm glad to have you here, A, because you're a member of the family, and B, because you've got this cool product, and C, because it gets us in the habit of having some guests on, and that's a good thing for us, too. So it's, mm-hmm. you're doing all sorts of great services for us.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. I know we've gone all over the map today. We're not done. I don't think. No, we're 55 minutes. Okay, we can go a little longer. So I've got one tip that came last week. And John, you'll appreciate this because you were ranting about it, how iTunes goes and wipes out, you know, and changes everything. And in Mac Geek Gab 474, we talked about using Doug's Apple scripts to fix ripped movies and reclassify them from home movies to regular movies. The problem, as many, many listeners pointed out, is that movies in the movies category are not identified easily by name when you're going through them visually. You have the artwork. So you've got to be able to have the artwork for the movie in there to identify what movie it is that you're going to see. And perhaps that's why Apple did this move, right? Because they realized that your home movies, quote unquote, home movies, might not have metadata, i.e. artwork associated with them. And therefore, suddenly all these movies that you had in that category are no longer visible. Well, you can add that back in. Of course, you can do it manually, or there is a piece of software called Identify 2, and it's at identify.armahardies.com. And that's actually right. That's how we'll put the URL in the show notes. But it's built to do exactly this in an automated way. It goes through, compares the movie you have to an online database, and syncs up all this stuff. Plex will do the same sort of thing. There are many, many online databases of movies and their descriptions and metadata, like actors and categories, like, you know, comedy or drama or kids or whatever. And then, of course, the poster artwork. So we will put a link to Identify. And thank you, Tracy. It is good stuff, because without that, you're right, this would be potentially disaster. And we don't like disaster.
I have a, I want to chime in on my favorite app for doing this.
Yeah, go, please.
Cause I also rip DVDs to my Mac, and, IVI by South Pole Software.
Okay.
Does this as well. So there's a pro version that will actually rip and pull in all the information. And I think that's $10, but there's also just a standard IVI available in the Mac App Store. And I think that might be $5.
Okay.
So it doesn't rip. So if you want to use Handbrake or what have you, and then pull that into IVI, then it will, then you can go for the cheaper version. But IVI pulls in the artwork, and you can actually choose from a bunch of different options that they found for that movie. It pulls in all the extra metadata, the rating, and sometimes it can even find the names of the chapter titles.
Oh, wow.
Which is very fun. And, in addition to that, if you rip a movie that doesn't have subtitles, I like subtitles. And if you don't want to have those burned in, so here's a bonus for you. There's one called Subler, which is really cool. But actually, I think IVI will even take care of that, too. So, but you'd have to find subtitles. So the place where I look for subtitles is subscene.com. So there's three things for you. IVI, really, IVI is the only one you got to worry about, because that'll take care of everything except for actually finding the subtitles, and then you can use Subscene for that.
Dude, this is awesome.
Yep.
Oh, excellent.
I was missing the Klingon parts in the Search for Spock. So
yeah,
I had to go get those.
Yeah, and so you
don't speak Klingon.
Do you add those in as? I know we're going to get a little geeky here, but this is good. Sure. That's what we do. Are you adding those in as a subtitle track, or are you doing what they call a burn in, where you're actually just putting them in the movie and they're in there forever?
It's a subtitle track.
It is. Okay.
And I'm not sure because I do use Subler for the subtitle part.
Yeah.
And especially with, so there are movies that don't have alternate languages, so you can just throw it in there,
right,
using IVI, and it works great.
Okay.
Subler offers you a little bit more in terms of setting up. So like in movies, search for Spock.
Yeah.
Where you have multiple tracks, and if you want both of those to be non-burned in actual subtitle tracks, Subler works perfect for that. So you can add in multiple tracks. You have the Klingon track and you have the standard English track, and then you can set one to be the all samples are yep. forced track, and then the other one will be the non-force. Mm. So
That's cool. Okay.
Subler is free, so check that out.
Yeah, Subler's cool. Okay, and you can also do that if I imagine you'd go to Subscene to get the file, but and I'm going to use that. But you could also use that with Handbrake, and Handbrake will do that forced burned in thing as well. So, yeah, this is good. Yeah, because you need that Klingon stuff. That's really important. Yeah.
Well, Dave, this shocked me. I think I mentioned to you Video Station on the Synology.
Yeah.
Imagine my shock, because I was researching a question, and so I recently ripped being there, which we talked about.
Yeah.
And as soon as I copied over the M4V file, I think it was, all of a sudden it appeared with the cover art and the title and a synopsis, and I'm like,
right.
Oh no, that is too cool.
Yeah, that's right. Video Station also has links to these online databases and just does it. That's right. It sometimes gets them wrong. It's funny sometimes when you put a movie in and then like 2 days later you look and you're like, I don't have that movie. And then you realize it miscategorized it, which happens. Well, Plex does it too. Yeah.
Well, I think it's doing it similar to the music ID technology, is that it's looking at the length and the chapters, and it's like, well, here's what I have in my database or close enough. So
yeah.
Maybe that's, I've had that too.
It's great. It's great. And one thing, and I know we've mentioned it many times, but for those of you that have Apple TVs and keep your video library on your NAS unit, if you have a Synology NAS, Synology's Video Station software, which is what John just mentioned here, will stream directly to your Apple TV, even though this is not something that Apple supports, allows, anything like that. It's not, you have to start it with your web browser or your iPhone or iPad, but it's not going via your iPhone or iPad. That's just the controller.
Oh, I can do it through the web browser.
You can do it through
the thing.
Yep. You can do it from your computer.
You saw, we had a question of someone that asked that and they haven't gotten back to us. They're like, I want to do this with my NAS. I hope they have a Synology, but you've got to kickstart it with either the iOS app or a web browser.
Right.
Then you can control it with
TV. Yeah, you could turn your iPhone off. It's not that it's going via your iPad with AirPlay. Cool. Yeah, but it once it goes, then you can actually pause it with the standard Apple TV remote or whatever remote you're using with your Apple TV. It's cool. I'm so happy that when they announced this feature, I called them up. I'm like, you don't actually mean that that's what you're doing. You're going AirPlay. They're like, well, yeah, we're using AirPlay. I'm like, oh, okay, great. They're like, but not via your device. I'm like, well, how'd you do that? They're like, well, I don't know. We just did it, which is great.
I was starting to get annoyed because I was looking for it to show up in one of my Apple TV menus. That was my expectation. And
yeah,
I'm like,
that'd be nice.
So they figured a way to kind of sneak around that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and all this goes away once Apple allows Plex on the Apple TV. Now, whether that'll ever happen or not, I don't know. But
Like DLNA and stuff like that?
Not DLNA, just like true Plex. If you could have a Plex client app on your Apple TV, and some TVs come with Plex. I mean, there are TVs that have a Plex client in them, but Plex is awesome. I mean,
Just got a new Blu-ray DVD player has a Plex app in it.
It's killer. Yeah. All right, now we're going to talk about Plex because it's awesome and it's awesome. So the idea behind Plex is it goes through and you can run a Plex server on your Mac. You do not need a NAS unit, but I have it running on my disk station, but you could run it on your Mac Mini. You could run it on your laptop. It doesn't matter. and you point it at your music, at your movie library. It'll also do music too. You point it at your movie library. It goes through, it categorizes everything like we've talked about here. It uses various online services to figure out what movies, you know, these files actually are, and it adds all the artwork and all that. Then you go from a client. Now the client could be Plex on your computer. It could be Plex on your DVD player, like Pete said, or the Plex app on your iPad or iPhone. And you go and you find a movie, and if you want to stream it direct to your device, you just press play. Done. Or you can sign up for a Plex Pass account, which I think is like $30 a year. And then you can not only stream to your device, but you can sync to your device, which is great for offline use on the plane. And it's way easier than doing it any other way, because I just go on my iPad and I say, I want that movie on the airplane, and I say sync, and then it downloads. And here's the best part. It can download when I'm at my house, or it can download when I'm in a hotel room. As long as I have internet access, it'll do it. And because Pete and I are buddies and we've linked with each other's Plex libraries, I can watch a movie from Pete's Plex library on any device that I want. And Pete can do the same thing, and I don't even know if he's doing it. So
I haven't been. I need to.
Yeah, you got to be doing it. Yeah. You know. So it's cool. Yeah, yeah. I know we've talked about it before, but Plex, it's good. PlexApp.com. They didn't pay us to say that. In fact, they didn't even give me a free Plex Pass account. I pay for that too, and happily every year I pay for it. So it's good. All right, now I'm done. I'm happy. Are we? But we're not done with the show. We don't have to be, right, John?
No, I want to get to at least one of the ones that
one of the ones that you prepped.
Yeah.
All right.
I think we'll get there.
I think we will. All right. Yeah. Let's at least do two more here. So, this one's quick and it's good. So listener John writes. He says, I'm getting a 2012 Mac Pro 12 core to replace my 2009 Mac Pro 8 core. Can I just remove the drives from the 09 and put them in the 12 without having to reinstall Mavericks or use Migration Assistant? Can I just move the drives? Can it be that easy? Will all my software work? Does anything look at the machine's ID or whatever? Any help would be appreciated. Yes, John, it truly is that simple. You just move the drives. The way it works is if the version of the OS that you have on one machine is updated enough to boot another machine, it will work. Now it's possible, like if, and I know you're not doing this, but it's possible that, you know, we're on, what are we on? 10.9. We're just on 10.9.0 right now, right? We don't have 10.9.1 yet, do we? Right. Help me out with this.
You don't.
Yeah, it's been a long day. Okay. Right. So 10.9.0, let's say, just for the sake of argument, that 10.9.1 is required to run the new 2013 Mac Pro that's not yet out. And that's a likely scenario. And it might even be 10.9.2. I don't know. Right. But if you don't yet have that version on your existing machine, then no, that drive won't boot the Mac Pro. But once you update your existing machine to that, it includes everything to boot every Mac that OS version can boot. And that's a change. I mean, it happened a while ago, but it wasn't always that way. It used to be that when you installed OS 10 on a machine, it would build the OS version that just that machine required. And you kind of had to go jump through a couple of hoops to put the full install on a drive so that it could just boot everything. But that's no longer the case. Every install of OS 10 can boot anything that version of OS 10 can boot, if that makes sense. So yes, it is that easy. Right, John?
It is, because I've done that. I think I told you in the past, Dave, when I had to send out an older machine to get repaired, I would pull the hard drive out of it and then put it on a newer machine and would just run off of that until the machine came back and then would.
Yeah, that's it.
It's a really, really one excellent feature of OS X, as long as the machines aren't too far apart or the OSs are too far apart.
I wonder about iTunes authentication, though.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Go ahead and tell him, Michael. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that it probably uses some identifying information from your hardware for any DRM'd content in iTunes to generate that key. So it would be really prudent of you to go into iTunes and go to store and click on deauthorize this computer before you switch it out.
That's really smart. Yeah.
Ooh, good one. Because I'm almost positive they use the MAC address of your Ethernet adapter, or at least it's part of the formula to come up with that. So, yeah. So if you go to a different machine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Good point.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to ask, I know I'm delaying getting to your question here, John, but I'm just going to ask this question really quick. Hey, and maybe it's a geek challenge. Since upgrading to something, either Mavericks or one of the latest versions of iTunes, I cannot Wi-Fi sync any iOS device whatsoever with my iMac, or really with anything.
I'm baffled, because on both my machines I can see my iPhone. And so I have the MacBook Pro with Mavericks, and I have the Mac Mini with the Mountain Lion, and iPhone 5S running the latest.
So what?
704.
You use an Apple router as the main router to manage your network, correct?
Correct. I have a Time Capsule first generation, 802.11n.
I think that's part of it. Sean King on Twitter, Sean King's having the same problem. Ted Landau also is having the same problem. And so we've had this sort of ongoing conversation for several weeks about, you know, things we've tried. Sean brought his iMac and his iPhone into the Apple store, and it synced flawlessly there. So it's not a firewall issue on his machine. It's something about his network at home. And he's using a modem provided by the cable company. So nothing in terms of my routers has changed. But something within iTunes has changed. So I throw that out there. Mike, I don't know if you'd seen it, Michael. I know you run into a lot of this stuff too. So.
Yeah, I'm on Apple routers, so it's working fine for me.
Yeah. And I do have one Apple router on my network, because I know there's some magic that they do. So maybe I need to reset all of my various routers. I do have a convoluted network here, as I've mentioned, just a little. Yeah. Makes troubleshooting really fun. Yeah.
Just 20 or 30 devices.
Well, the problem is I have. Okay.
And then when you get hit by lightning, the fun really begins.
So. I'm totally protected against lightning right now. Knock on wood. So I have my main router, which is a Buffalo device. I have a Time Capsule that I only use not as a Wi-Fi point anymore. But it's used as a Time Capsule, and it also sits on the network in effectively bridge mode, although it's neutered in that sense too. And then I have two other Buffalo routers that are in just access point bridge mode, because just to get Wi-Fi in different spots, the office and the other corner of the house. I think that's it. So just I only have four routers, and three of them are in bridge mode. So
now, you know what, Dave? Speaking of Apple routers, I want to throw this out as a very tiny tangent. You probably already know what I'm going to say here, but the thing is, I've seen the 802.11 AC, either airport or time capsule.
Yeah.
And they look very nice. But here's the one fish shake, and I don't think I'm going to get one for this reason, because it actually came up when I was researching a listener issue.
Yep.
This is the first Time Capsule that does not support SNMP.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, for some people, you may not even know what SNMP is, and if you don't know what it is, then don't worry about it.
Doesn't matter. That's right.
I've confirmed through multiple sources that the 802.11 AC is the first, and probably all future models will not support it. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to put it back in the firmware. I suspect it's in the firmware somewhere, and I don't know why they would take it out. It's a feature that lets you monitor the performance and maybe control the performance of the...
I will point out...
Mostly for monitoring what's happening, and I don't know why they'd remove it. It's a standard. Most routers have it, and probably the ones that you have, Dave, the three others, have SNMP monitoring.
All four, because my Time Capsule is a first-gen Time Capsule, right. So it has it too. But I will tell you, I don't use it on any of them, because my Buffalo routers, either running Buffalo's firmware, which two of them run, or the DDWRT firmware, which is what my main router runs, they all give me that information via their web interface, so I don't need to go get it via SNMP. And that's why I run part of the reason why I run Buffalo stuff. I also run it because they had 802.11 AC long before Apple, and their 3x3 MIMO stuff it makes a huge difference. I've been running 3x3 MIMO stuff from Buffalo for a long time, and those three antennas coming and going make a huge difference in terms of not just network performance, but also range. So, yeah. And Apple's new stuff does too. So, you're covered on that. So,
all right.
Yeah. Makes a big difference. It's one of those geeky things that Apple knows they have to talk about, but they, you know, they don't like to get that geeky, but it's essentially using three antennas and it, you're not sending to, picking which antenna is the right one for that bit of data. The biggest problem with Wi-Fi performance is having to retransmit packets. And when you've got multiple antennas going, sending and receiving, you limit the chance that you're going to have to retransmit any one packet. And that's actually what makes Wi-Fi, you know, when you see your Wi-Fi speed changing, that's the thing that's happening is, you know, what your effective speed is because of packet retransmissions or not. And 3x3 MIMO deals with a lot of that. And that's where you get those speed boosts from it, which makes sense. So, all right, John, let's do Miguel before we all get right to another tangent.
Miguel, this was a good one because I actually ran into this before Miguel sent this in. So this is a mini fish shake at Apple. So Miguel writes in, after the Mavericks and the new iWork updates, I lost the ability to send a copy of any numbers document via Gmail. My office mail is a Gmail account, and whenever I send or try to send a numbers file as an attachment, an error occurs saying that the Gmail server blocked my email because it is deemed dangerous. And I actually ran into this recently as well, Dave, sending not a numbers file, but another type of file. They refer me to an article that describes the type of files that cannot be sent via Gmail. The list includes EXEs, obviously, and several other files. I believe it sees the numbers file as some sort of nested zip file. I would appreciate any help you can give me with this issue, since it was something we used to do all the time in our office and rely on that ability. Thank you. All right, Miguel, and here is my response. So, yes, they have changed the file format. So it is now a package or a directory. And you can do this. So I tried it first. I tried this with an old numbers file, and it worked just fine because it's a standalone file. But if you look at files created with the new numbers, Dave, and everything else, and you right click on it and say show package contents. Oh, well, it's another one of these kind of sneaky things that Apple typically, or it's a package thing. It's really a directory.
Isn't it a gzipped package, though?
No,
it's not. Well, it used to be, right?
I don't believe so. No. Well, I couldn't open it. I didn't look at the old numbers file.
Okay.
But no, what's happening? So with this new file,
I'm pretty sure it was gzipped in the past.
Okay, and that could be why. Okay, you're kind of getting ahead of me here, but so let me finish this out here.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
So one thing that Gmail will do is that if they see a file being sent and it has a zip file within it, they will block that because they consider that a security risk. Because I guess what happens is that it's too easy for someone to on a PC or on a Mac to unzip that, and then it wreaks havoc. So they block that. And sure enough, Dave, I did open up a file from the latest numbers, looked in the package, and sure enough, there is a zip file in there.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why Gmail is blocking this. So, and you kind of helped answer the question here. So I'm like, wow, you know, there must be a way he can get around this. So one would be to export it to the older numbers 09 format. So you could do that, and that gets through, but for whatever reason, that may not work for him.
Right.
That would probably be the easiest solution. But here, Dave, I come up with what I thought was a kind of clever solution to this is you don't have to send a zip file is natively what Apple will create if you try to, you know, compress something.
If you try to do the archive in the Finder, right?
Right. That creates a zip file. That's a very common file format. But OS X understands another format. Now, this gets a little tricky, and maybe you can help me answer this, but why not send it as a gzip file? So gzip is another way to compress something. Now, you can't do it directly, as far as I know, from the Finder, Dave. But what I did send along was a way that you could do this from the terminal.
Okay.
And it's and here's the command. So the way you can do that, now it gets tricky because you can't gzip a directory.
Right, you've got to create a tarball first. Before you get into that though, did you try just zipping up the file and sending that? Will Gmail also block that?
Of course I did.
Okay.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Please do.
That was my first.
Drop the .zip. Just change the suffix or to nothing or.
I think that may work. I think it's going to be smart enough because the zip file has a certain format. I think they'll catch that.
I think
maybe not.
Well, no, no, no. I think that's what you're sending when you're sending the number, the new numbers format. I think it is a zipped file, right? And so,
well, no, within the package is a .zip file.
Yeah, but I think the package itself is a zipped file.
Oh. It may be, but I think I don't believe it is. It's actually a dot numbers file.
Okay.
But the reason that they block it is because they see a zip file in there, and there's no way to undo that, or I wouldn't do that. That's another way you could do it. You could change the zip file within the package. I don't think I'd recommend that. But here's a way to do it, Dave, that works.
Yeah, yeah.
So as you suggested, you create a tar ball, and a tar is just another tar is a way of creating an archive. And the command isn't too complex here. So what you would do is say tar. So you go to the terminal, you get to the directory you want to do this in. And then you'd say tar space dash zcvf space, then the name you want to give the gzip file. So whatever you want to name it, .gz, then a space, and then a quote, the name of your numbers data file, .numbers, another quote and a slash, because it's actually a directory, and that will create a gzip file that you can then send. And then fortunately, so the archiver in OS X doesn't create gzip files, but it can un-gzip them. The archive manager, I think it's called archive manager, buried somewhere in the system tools. If you double zip on a gzip file, it'll un-gzip it. So that's a way to get around this. Now, I looked on the Google forums, and somebody is aware of this. Maybe not Google yet.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know if they're going to fix this. Now, maybe there's a nicer tool to create gzip files in OS X.
I found one. I've always been... my history of working with tar and gzip started long before GUI interfaces existed, right? So I never before this point in time thought about finding a non-terminal way of creating gzips, gzip tar balls, because I use it all the time. But I just did a Google search for it and found a tool called Keka, K-E-K-A, that we'll put in the show notes, and that will do it, and it'll create tars, and I mean it'll gzip, it'll do whatever you want. So that might be the thing. And I also checked, John, I looked inside a new numbers file, and it is a folder. Mm-hmm. You're right, it is not zipped. And that's that's part of what's going on here, is that, the new version of Numbers is a port of the iPad version, which uses this other file format. So the file format is consistent between the two, but Gmail blocks it. And I understand why, but they got to fix that. So
Now another solution here. And actually, so recently I had to mail a Visual Studio project to someone.
Okay.
It was part of a little test I'm taking. And so I tried doing this, and the same thing happened to me. And it's the same sort of problem, is that within a Visual Studio project, there's a zip file. And so I did what MGG Jim in our chat room suggested, is I said, oh, okay, well, I'll send you the source file, which is just a text file. And by the way, here's a link to Dropbox link to download the project file.
Right. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
So that's another way to get around it. So I can kind of understand why Google's doing it, but I think they need to tweak their algorithm to say, oh, this is a numbers folder.
Yeah.
So I'll probably let it through. I'll, or they just want to aggravate Apple.
Yeah, well, that's kind of how it goes. All right. Well, I think I don't think we need to break our record from last show. And I'm pretty sure last show was longest show we ever did. So
we're at 123.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to have a question answered, or if you have a tip to share, or you have cool stuff found to share, feedback@mattgeekgab.com is the place to email us.
Maybe. You could try that. That may work, but Dave, I prefer feedback@mattgeekgab.com.
Feedback@mattgeekgab.com.
You guys in your feed bag.
I'm hungry.
Don't make Dave create any more aliases.
Feedback exists, but feedback was requested by a different Michael, one of our premium listeners. And so feedback actually redirects to premium@macgeekab.com. And that address and feedback, if you must, is available to all of our premium supporters. And for those of you that have a little extra and want to go a little extra, we very much appreciate all your support, and you can learn about that at MacGeekGab.com. Listener Michael also asked for something that we also created this week. Many of you want to know when we have our live show, and we do post that to Facebook, but we don't always post it a long time in advance, and some of you like to plan. And Pilot Pete was one of those, but it was actually listener Michael that asked first, said, can you share your calendar stream with us? And sure we can. So MacGeekGab.com/calendar will, if you just load that in your browser, it'll redirect, open up Calendar or BusyCal, whatever you've got set as your main calendar program. And it will allow you to subscribe in a read-only fashion, of course, to our Mac Geek Gab calendar. So hopefully John and I will remember not to accidentally put our doctor's appointments and stuff in that calendar, because all of you can see it now. So.
Yeah, and you don't want people rescheduling the show either, so read-only is good.
Read-only is good. Yeah, absolutely. So
I
that's
took that one too. Event off of there. Awesome. You know, I don't know if I think I got a reset. I think I created an event on my iPhone, and I think it defaulted to that for some reason. I got to change that setting.
Yeah, it's in. That's all you got to do. So we got that. You can call us at 206-666-GEEK, which is anyone?
4335.
That's right, 4335. All right, John, tell them, what else do we have?
There's the Facebooks, facebook.com/MacGeekAd, where you can also, though, as Dave said, maybe not always in advance, so I think I just saw a couple of notifications. But Facebook, you can go to Facebook. You can ask some questions. I think I'm working on one right now, Dave. Maybe you want to help me out here. I'm kind of stumped on this one.
All right.
You can...
let's finish the show first, shall we?
When the show notes are finished. Yeah. When the show notes are finished, I will post a notification on Facebook. And, you know, I guess you could like us on Facebook. I guess that helps us and it does. Helps you. Right?
So we also have the Twitters. And we're all on Twitter. So the show is twitter.com/MacGeekGab. That guy there is at John F. Braun. The guy sitting next to me is at Pilot Pete. The guy sitting in Rockford, Illinois at the getappler.com headquarters is Michael Johnston. And I'm Dave Hamilton. And Mac Observer is at Mac Observer. So I think that covers everything. I do, as I do at the end of every show, but today it's much more personal, isn't it, Michael? I would like to thank you, not only for coming on the show, but for the work that you're about to go do and convert this to AAC and add all those chapters. And I hope that you can continue to do that. I hope that the tools and the interest is still out there going forward, because I know we have a lot of listeners that really appreciate that. So.
Yeah, I think that it'll continue happening, especially considering the fact that I do my podcast with that version of GarageBand, so there's no reason for me to stop using that. So,
well, what I hope is
there no other tool? There's no other tool except GarageBand and create AAC?
Fission from Rogue Amoeba will do it. There was a little problem with Fission doing it, but now that Paul Kafasis is doing his Just the Tip podcast with Amy Jane Gruber, he found the bug, and I think he's fixing it. So that's good. Yeah. But still, if Apple drops support for it, that's where, you know, that's where it could get to be a problem.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if like the podcast app stops working with that properly, or iTunes stops working with it properly, it gets us into a realm of, okay, wait a minute, what are we doing here? But you know, anyway. So yes, thank you, Michael. That's a long-winded way of saying thank you. Thanks for coming on the show.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah, absolutely. I'd also like to thank Cashfly, CacheFly.com, for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. The podcast marketplace has BB Edit and Yojimbo from Barebone Software, Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, all from Smile. Gazelle.com gets you your money for your old iOS devices, and Squarespace to host your blog or website. MGG11 gets you 10% off all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Michael, it is an absolute pleasure to have had you here, but I would love it if you would leave us with perhaps a lasting piece of advice for all of the listeners here.
Well, if I had one piece of advice to give everybody, that would be to definitely not get caught.
Made up.